I have it.
That boy like Madea. Let go, Madea.
Tonga by Lord. Blocked by Armstead. Two into the end zone.
It's your two favorite degenerates back with another Day One Dolphins podcast. Once again, hosted by your boy, Ouch. Follow me on Twitter at YFinsYY. Here with me, per usual, my fellow lifelong Miami Dolphins fan slash coach, Chief Sutt. Throw him a follow on Twitter at Chief Sutt. Follow our podcast, Twitter at Day One Dolphins. Stay up to date. Let's get down to it. What's going on, Sutt?
You said you want to get down to it. I'm
get
feeling
Tua it.
I'm feeling Tua and O. I'm feeling first in the division. I'm feeling great, baby.
Crazy.
Speaking of Tua, I want to give everybody a stat. I don't know if they've heard it. Do you know what number Tua wears?
Yes, number one.
Okay, that's actually what PFF rated us as the overall team in the league right now. Number one. It's offense nice. And defense across the board. I just don't think in the history of PFF, I've even seen us in the top 10 in one of those metrics. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's the part that makes me not want to care about it. Like, I get it, and it's a nice gesture. It's like...
it's cute.
You know, it's like a fat girl telling me I'm so handsome at the mall. Like, thanks. Thank you so much. I'm going to keep it moving, though. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel.
Of course. But, you know, that's still a little ego boost, and that's something that you can flex on, I guess, an op. Yeah, well, you know, I still got hoes flexing on me at the mall. You ain't had no hoes flexing on you at the mall.
That's true. Back then, they didn't want me.
But you know?
I want to say, what? First off, let's take it easy. Let's take it slow here, all right? 2-0. Both of the games are road games. So we are one of two teams in the entire NFL that are 2-0 and haven't played a home game yet, which the other team would be the San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, keep that in mind for the Super Bowl.
And but how do you want me to slow down knowing that?
I don't want you to slow down. I'm just saying we're trying to take this in order here, all right? 2-0, both road games. We're going into our first home game at The Rock. 2-0, undefeated against
the
Broncos. Feel great about it, right?
Unlimited.
Second off, another thing I want to point out, Tua has taken one sack in two games with Teron Armstead missing and Austin Jackson playing right tackle.
And it was a really good defensive play call in his defense.
And
it was
what
a pretty
did I
well-timed
say?
Blitz.
And what did I say in the pod leading up to this one? I said, look, Khalil Mack is amazing. Joey Bosa is amazing. But New England schemes up ways to find Matthew Judon coming at you unblocked. He's going to come from different places, and he gets that chance a couple times a game, every game. That's what they do for him. And there it was, just like I said it would be.
You called the whole defense, essentially. You called that they were going to do that, and there was no way they were going to give up the direct middle of the field. And
I told you that they were going to.
They really didn't.
They forced us to go outside. I mean, like, think about it. What do we know about Bill Belichick? I knew that no matter what, this dude is not going to lose in the embarrassing fashion that you beat other teams. He does not allow teams to run their offense through one player. If you're going to beat him, so be it. He'll sit there and let you beat him slowly all game, little by little. But you ain't going to do it in a blowout fashion through one guy who's your best player. He just doesn't let that happen.
So no splash plays, no big plays, none of that fun shit that you've been getting used to. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And so you got to watch Tyreek Hill be a little bit contained. And I'm sure that, you know, and for the sake of everybody, well, Tyreek said he's unguardable. But in the realistic sense of playing the game, football, and how it works, the fact that Tyreek was guarded is what made the offense run the way that it did and our ability to succeed that way. So we incorporated all these things that they weren't supposed to talk about in training camp, all these wild variations of screenplays and jet sweeps and motions that lead into screenplays and different ways to get the running backs the ball out in space. And, you know, this is the stuff that we were missing last year. you could tell now watching the way that this offense is evolving with all the wrinkles that McDaniels put in it, just how limited we really were last year. The Chargers game lost last year is starting to make more and more sense to me because we were wondering why he wouldn't adjust and how he couldn't adapt. It's because he was, it was like he only had a handful of firework plays that he'd been beating everybody with, but when it came time for him to adjust, like, they didn't have that in their arsenal yet in the first year of coaching. Well, now yeah. We do. Now we got answers, Sut.
I mean, it makes it a lot easier when you run the ducking haul. And last year, while we were screaming about that, yeah, you're right. He didn't have the quote-unquote place to do it, but he did. He just refused to run the ball. And last night, first down, basically every first down, Raheem Mostert got the ball. Handoff. I'm giving you 5-6. And, like, you saw a commitment to running the ball, and that was our extra weapon besides not using the deep middle. It was that quick RPO and just establishing the ball, just running the ducking haul, as we say.
Yeah, no, I love that he did it. I just think that the left and right plays that looked like the same formations we're running the ball out of are what ultimately made the difference. So Patriots are playing a lot of cover three, a lot of, you know, they're sticking those guys out there to make sure that Tyreek Hill is not going to get to do what he wants to do. In turn, the boxes are light, you know, daring us kind of to run the ball. And teams have done that in the past, and we haven't been able to do it if we're just running the same vanilla outside zone runs. But we're mixing in those runs with what look like they're going to be runs, but in reality, they're screen plays and, you know, what we just mentioned, a bunch of different motions and jets. And, you know, Eric Uzomah's getting it. Tyreek Hill's getting it. Jaylen Waddle's getting it. Three different running backs are getting it, you know. And they're stretching you left to right. They're making these linebackers make decisions and run fast left and right so that, you know, it makes it a little easier on us, leaving the defense to guess when we're actually going to cut it in between the tackles. And that's something that we didn't see as much last year. So right. That if we did run the ball, it kind of was either this or that. Either they're breaking it outside or they're cutting it in the tackle or they're trying to go up the middle and failing. So it's probably a good sign moving forward as to how well we're going to be able to run the ball against teams like this.
And again, with no Teron Armstead, we're able to run. Raheem averaged 6.7 a clip last night, brother. With a 43-yard long. Yeah, you could take the 43-yard long out, but that would be 17 carries for still about 80-something.
You can see me on Twitter all during the Dalvin Cook hype, the Jonathan Taylor hype. I wanted the guys just for the sake of, you know, that's fun, and if they want to come in Miami and take a discount, that's great. But I was also on Twitter going at it with fellow Dolphins fans about Raheem. And they're like, oh, he's injury-prone, this and that. And, like, first off, you know how I play about the injury-prone thing. Like, whatever, dude. Everyone gets injured. Let's just see and not try to pretend like we know what's going to happen. Second off, he averaged damn near 5 yards a carry last year. He went off in the playoffs last year. Like, he was efficient. The toughest games that we played last year that they decided to lean on Raheem, he delivered every time. Yep. So I was out here defending him the whole time. Now come to find out, he picked up right where he left off with a little bit more of a commitment to the run game, like you said. What happens when you give this man 29 touches? It's a matter of time before he gets that big one and gashes you.
Tell me there weren't two occasions off the top of my head. The one where he ran through the arm tackle on Jones, the two-way player, and Buddy had to get taken out of the game because of a shoulder injury.
I think he separated his shoulder. I've had that happen to me before because you lose, like, nerve in your hand. Yeah. You can't move your hand and stuff for a little bit.
That's essentially not really his fault. He was, you know, arm tackling is bad. You don't want to be doing that. But part of the reason why is that when dudes are running hard, people think just because Raheem Mostert's so fast that he's just a speed guy, but he delivers contact. Oh, and yeah. If you go to arm tackle him, bro, you might hurt yourself. And he got hurt, and then there was a play where he ran Buddy over, and it popped the top buckles on his chin straps.
Oh,
it knocked his helmet crooked.
Yeah, he had to come out the game to get his things. It was the same dude. That was the same guy. He got tore up by Raheem, man.
I'm like, hey, man, some guys need to they need a rebrand almost. Raheem Mostert is not just a speed back or an out of the backfield receiving back. Bro, he's a low key power back. with how he's willing to drop his shoulder. And he's fundamentally watching Raheem Mostert, the way he carries the ball, the way he reads the holes, his vision, his cutbacks, his patience. He's a very polished running back. You can just make teaching tape on him. And I think that's what McDaniels looks for in his running backs. You see flashes of that in Savon, because Savon is, again, he's not nearly as fast as Raheem, but when he makes a cut, he explodes. He's down to deliver some contact. He doesn't do a whole bunch of dancing and funny stuff. And I don't know, bro. We've been okay with the running back room. Taylor would have been awesome, but we've been okay with going in with what we got. That was the first flash of the A-train. I'm cool with that. I like that we're randomly just throwing reverses to all the receivers, too.
We haven't seen Chris Brooks yet. And then, mind you, Eric Isakama's being used, like they pointed out before, in a Debo role. You know, he's getting more rushing chances than he is getting receiving looks. So,
yeah, they got more carries than A-Train last night.
I mean, I'm not worried about it at all. That's all I'm going to say. He put on weight. Raheem Mostert put on weight. Mike McDaniel goes on record saying he thinks that Raheem is the strongest pound-for-pound player on the team. You know what I mean? So it goes right with what you were saying. He's a monster. But let's talk about the Waddle. Looks like, obviously, he's concussed. That was a very dirty play, in my opinion. Try not to be biased, but, like, the ball was already on the ground. You still made contact, and on top of that, you went helmet-to-helmet with the contact. You know, just the fact that Bill Belichick argues with it and is, like, mad about that. Like, come on, bro. Be serious.
Bill's mad about a lot more than just that, but let's talk about how the Colorado hit on Travis Hunter. Do you think that hit was dirty?
I absolutely do think that hit was dirty, but, I mean...
So I don't think that one was dirty. I think if he doesn't, a guy like Travis Hunter, if you don't just hit him, there's a chance that he can catch anything, dude. And how
he was already out of bounds. So, like, you put it like this, like, think about, like, put it more like this. Think about the term unnecessary force or unnecessary roughness. When you're on the sideline, you don't have to take somebody's head off to make the play. It's the same thing. Either way, it's the exact same thing when you push them out of bounds. Not to mention, the ball already touched the ground, and he was out of bounds before he gets hit by this kid. To me, that's dirty. I'm not going to say, oh, you have to kick him out of the game. They're college kids. It's a split second. I get it. He might have been too into it. Maybe he really wanted to make a statement, and it happened to be late, whatever. I'm seeing things where they got his address, his mom's name, and all this information. Like, I'm not on that, but yeah. I think it was dirty.
All right, well, if he was out of bounds, maybe, but I don't think that kid can react fast enough and tell that he's out of bounds before he gets there. So I don't think that one's dirty, but I do think the one on Waddle, simply because he was aiming like the very tippy top of his head at the back of Waddle's head, that's just whack, bro.
Also, you're like, talking about the difference between a kid who probably just like came out of JUCO and started playing at Colorado State, probably the biggest, most viewed game of his entire college career or football career, yep, versus a guy who's an NFL professional and is and plays on an NFL coached team. You know what I mean? Like, yep, I'm willing to let a little bit of a mistake or, you know, slide by in at a college level compared to the NFL. Like, you don't see that often in the NFL, and it's really, really frowned upon.
Yep. You can't. It's just not cool when everybody knows what's not cool. Make a play, go for the ball, do what you got to do. And when people talk about injuries, you and I kind of have a similar philosophy. Football is the most violent sport. It's dangerous, and people are going to get hurt no matter what. All you can do is try to protect yourself the most you can, and like just accept that it might happen. And it can just be a finger, it could be a wrist, it could be an ACL. Like
anybody
stuff,
who says
stuff happens.
Anything different hasn't had to shake a bobbly helmet too big for their head back and forth until they see straight again. Like, yeah, once you do that, you get it, bro. I don't know.
Some things are learned the hard way.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, like, all of those guys have been playing since they, some of them playing since they were six, some of them only been playing for a few years, but they all get it. Like, protect each other out here. No, rip his head off, but, you know, don't actually just hit somebody late, do something dirty, bro. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's whatever. I mean, hopefully we don't see much more of that. But the fact that Bill wasn't okay with it was annoying. On offense, other than that noteworthy, that dime that Tua threw to Berrios was amazing.
Amazing.
I could replay that all day. But also, like, Berrios in general, coming out of training camp, he beats Robbie Anderson for a spot. I think we thought it was mostly because of his ability on special teams as a returner. And I'd love to say, watching him catch these balls, fair catch balls, I mean, one, he was sliding on his knees to get in place to do it. He's been secure. His hands have been great so far. You know, I'm scared watching his little tiny ass out there doing it, but he's been really, really good. And I can tell you right now, him making some of the most important catches for two games in a row in the most clutch time of the games, difficult catches at that.
The Brax effect, dog. Was not
on my bingo card coming into the season, big dog. I'm going to be honest with you right now. As much as I like to harp on all the things that I said right about everything, I did not expect the level of impact that Braxton Berrios has made on this team, and it is insane.
The only people that probably did are Hurricanes fans, because that's what Brax does, bro. He's a big play guy, and he keeps himself safe. He's not a dude that is quote-unquote injury-prone, because it's insane that he avoided that contact on that Tua dime. Like, that could have easily been physical. He returns punts, and he returns kicks, but he times it. He's not going to return every single punt that's punted to him. He's cool with just fair catching it and just keeping it down where it is. You know, if it's inside the 10, catch it. He's so smart, bro, and he's very clean. And again, some of the softest hands probably in the league, bro. That's why he stuck around and played everywhere he goes. And he kind of did the same thing for the Jets.
I can't believe they got rid of him. Especially in the return game. I can't believe the Jets got rid of him, especially given the state of their wide receiver room. It's crazy. But that just goes to show what we have in Wes Welker, you know, the ability to, like, look at talent and know what you have, know when, how to use it.
Yeah.
I was also worried about the special teams coming into this season. Like, we got rid of most of the fifth, sixth, whatever string players that are only on the roster. Like, you know, oh God, what was that white safety's name that stuck around forever?
Clayton Flegelum.
Yeah, him, like a bunch of other guys that were really just getting their money on special teams. We got rid of a lot of these guys, and you know, so I'm like, man, I just don't want any, like, you know, like the Ravens last year, you know, people running back touchdowns on us. The Packers did it to us. Like, it already wasn't great. The fact that they're just kicking that ball in the end zone every time and say, hey, we don't got time to play these type of games with y'all. We'll take it at the 25. Love it. Love it so much. You don't trust the situation, great. But still, as it pertains to the special teams, if the ball, it's fourth down, and you got to choose between, and you want to go for it on fourth down, but you have to choose between letting Jason Sanders rip a 50-plus yard field goal or let Tua try to convert the fourth down, let Tua try to convert the fourth down if you're going for it. Otherwise, punt the ball. I'm not doing it no more with Jason Sanders.
They got to be talking about that right now, right?
Get him the f*** out of here.
Yeah.
He's so far from reliable. Like, cool, you're somebody that we know and we're familiar with, and you've been on the team, and I watch you hang out with Durham Smythe at the Panthers game, and I know who your girlfriend is on Instagram, whatever. I don't care anymore. Somebody else will take the money that you got and not miss all the kicks that you miss. That's just plain and simple.
All right, so let's get creative. What about having maybe Tua kick?
Anyone. Let Tyreek Hill go out there. Sign Ocho Cinco. He'd love to be on the Miami Dolphins.
I bet Durham could kick at least from 40.
What's the dude on YouTube? His name is Destroying. He's from Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Yes, sir.
He was a good kicker at UCF, but because he was doing YouTube stuff and making money on YouTube, they kicked him out of college before they passed whatever they passed and allowed you to make your own money while you're in college.
Yeah, the NIL stuff.
Yeah, now he's doing that. Sign him. He's a good kicker, and he's from the crib. Sign him.
You know, I don't think there's one person that, like, came into the season comfortable with Jason Sanders. I think we were all kind of just like, I mean, you know, they didn't really worry about it or look for other things. They didn't worry about guard. They didn't worry about running back. They didn't worry about all the corner, all these other things that, you know, everyone was stressing. But maybe we all should have just been pressing them for a kicker.
And Jake Bailey ain't great either.
This is bad. Yeah. I mean, he had a solid punt or two, but, you know, the kicking thing is unacceptable, and I agree. They have to be talking as a staff that, like, you know, if it's fourth and anything less than 11, throw it up. Yeah. You're looking at a team that yesterday, 11.6 yards per completion on a 70% completion percentage and 8.1 yards per attempt. Only one sack. We saw the one interception. Like, bro, statistically speaking, if it's under 8 yards and you throw it, you're probably going to convert it. There's a higher chance that you do than that you don't.
You can't miss, like,
Jason Sanders, dude.
That often.
The extra point last week, we were ready to riot.
That was almost, we could have lost the game off of that if the defense didn't make the stand that it did. And the defense really wasn't making a stand all game. Like, you know, I don't want to harp on it. It was a win or whatever, but just for the sake of this conversation, like, that was easily a way to lose that game immediately, and it was an extra point. I have never, ever tried to kick an extra point in my life from that distance, and I guarantee you, after an hour of trying to do it out there on the sidelines, that I would go in there and nail that goddamn kick, all right?
You'd have an NFL kicking coach and probably McDaniel standing there with you, calming you down and teaching you how to do it. You would make, I guarantee you, just
25 yards,
bro, you would hit a game winner from 50 given the opportunity with an hour of practice.
I don't know about 50, but if I'm being realistic, I think I could hit that 20 or whatever it is that they do. I don't know about not 50, but that 20.
I'm feeling a Rudy.
Come on, man. 25, what is it? Where do they move it to? Just come on, man.
Yeah, man, that's not cool. But we're not going to sit here and talk about Jason Sanders. What I would want to talk about is looking at the team stats, bro, is awesome. Because if you're a Patriots fan, you can't say anything to us. The time of possession, we had it for 30 minutes and 19 seconds. They had it for 29 minutes and 41 seconds. So basically completely even, right? We ran 10 less plays and had 101 more yards. So our yards per play was 6.4. Theirs was 4.1, which is not bad at all. But 6.4 is literally 2.3 yards more. Like, everything, penalties 6-5. We had one more penalty yard with one more penalty. And we don't even need to talk about the refs anymore. I think I'm quietly just going to start putting my video evidence together and creating my claim and finding a lawyer big enough to help me create a lawsuit. But it'll probably get me killed. So I don't know if I want to deal with all that, because you know how they are. But 44 more passing yards, but their yards per completion is very Devontae Parker-esque. Their whole offense is very Devontae Parker-esque with how big and just slow and boobly they are.
They're banking on throwing it up. The same thing we did when Flores was here with Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki and Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's exactly what they want to do.
It leads to a lot of sacks, a lot of balls floating over people's heads, and a lot of guys just not being open. Especially when you quietly have a guy like Kader Kohou that can cover. And we talked about it pre-show. The only target that's out there, really, is Eli Apple. There's not really anyone else that people would choose to throw it at or, like,
and he made it. I would love attack. To start talking about the defense now anyways, but we can start with Eli Apple. As angry as he made me in coverage a couple times that game, there were a couple good plays, obviously, by Eli Apple. And even on the plays, I mean, I think we just watched back the film, and it was like three or four screens that he identified immediately. Now, he only made the tackle, and it was an amazing tackle, one out of the three or four. But the other times, he did grab him by the ankles a little bit, slow him down, identify it, give everyone else a chance to come up behind him and make the stop. Got roasted in coverage a little bit, but, like, you know what I mean? That's going to happen to him. We're just waiting on Jalen Ramsey to get back, right?
Absolutely, positively. And he did get toasted a couple times, and he did miss a couple open field tackles. But, again, he's not the guy that I want one-on-one in Oklahoma drills and throwing money on him. Like, he's not a tackler. He's a smart football player. He's a guy that in the past could hang with Tyreek and cover him and cover, you know, teams bigger guys. He's still smart. He's an idiot, and he tries to, like, bank on himself a little too much here and there. But he was the target last night. He knew they were going to throw it at him a lot with a whole bunch of boring stuff and just try to body him out. And they did with that slow, just blow my mind offense. I did like how they did a little bit more motion and they were like kind of opening up a little bit more than what they have in the past. But for the most part, when you just have every receiver running like slower than a 4.6, it's just such a change of pace from us that it's almost annoying. But I don't know. He's only around as a fill-in. And I think the development of Cater has been excellent. Cater played all 74 snaps along with Jerome, Deshaun, X, and Javon. So, like, he's there with the boys. Deshaun Elliott is there with the boys.
Like, yeah, he had a good game, too. Last game I mentioned him, he was a little up and down. Obviously, most of the defense was. But this game, I thought Deshaun Elliott is a great second safety piece. Like, he's rallying to the ball. He's made a couple of good plays. As far as everybody else, I got a little notes I wrote, like, just to run down. Zach Sealer, somehow, years later, still underrated. We'll let you know when he's appropriately rated, but we're getting a steal on how much we're paying Zach Sealer right now, which contributes to our ability to maintain a level of talent and still afford to bring in more talent based on how overlooked this guy has been. Christian Wilkins, back to his usual self, and they're kind of like, you know, the Hardy boys or whatever. I saw somebody actually call, you'll love this, they called Braxton and Craycraft the Hardy boys. It was Jason Sarney. I thought that was pretty good. But Sealer and Wilkins, another tandem that are just unstoppable. Wilkins,
they're the Dudley boys.
Bad game. Maybe Wilkins' first bad game ever last week, comes back to usual self, no problem.
Yep. I don't think his game was that bad, but it wasn't his best for sure.
Well, it certainly doesn't help when everyone else is, you know, missing their assignments around you. But
showed up when it counted.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Van Ginkle fills in for Jalen Phillips as the edge rusher, pure edge rusher this game. And Jesus Christ. I mean, what would you give it out of 10? Like, the as a difference maker.
Lined 9.5.
Yeah, dude. I always shoot it low. I'm giving it 10 out of 10, bro. Like,
no, 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
Off ball linebacker. In this game, he just looks like he should be making $20 million a year.
But outside linebacker is always what he's done. I think they just asked him to play inside linebacker because he played outside so well that they just kind of assumed he'd be comfortable at it. But it felt like he was back at home. And we've always been AVG fans. This is a guy that we didn't want to see leave and go straight to New England an hour later. Like, he has always made plays, special teams plays. I love him. I can't say enough about him. I wish he could start. And I don't know how you could start him and maybe rotate Chubb and JP or just rotate looks. But I don't know. For when it counts, he's a guy that I want on the field no matter what. He loves high pressure situations. He will make a play on anyone at any time. He has no fear of anything.
I think
he's the best.
Depth in the linebacker room that you would see him replace probably Emmanuel Ogba as that third sub somebody out edge rusher, and he still can play off the ball sometimes in a more, you know, probably more comfortable than some other guys that we have. But he probably, his usage stems from the Flores era, you know, where he's putting him in, he's making everybody play in multiple different positions. So I think that's probably how that came to be. But man, he was beating 1-2 run around like his hair was on fire. So we can go ahead and say, I want to say that was Andrew Van Ginkle's best game as a Dolphin.
Personally, I have to give that to the Rams game because I was there and he blocked a punt and scored a touchdown and did a whole bunch of other stuff on defense. So that was tight.
He's definitely done this a couple times for sure. Even he's in 2020. The man. But like we talked about before we started recording, is that that was in this scheme where it was just like chaos for the offense that was facing mm-hmm. them, where you didn't know who was coming at what point, this and that. This was Andrew Van Ginkle lining up at edge and just simply beating his guy and getting there every time, plus reading the screens, plus he was just like, it was like a flawless game for this guy.
Bro, what do you think his PFF grade was?
I have no idea, because I don't like Chris Collinsworth or that company, but...
So just for the haters, he was the number two overall on defense with a 90.4, including 91 in coverage and 84 in pass rush. The only person higher than him, Bradley Chubb, with a 90.8. So, again, I think he can start. He played two less snaps than Chubb. He had one more coverage snap and the same amount of pass rushing snaps. The lowest graded player on defense, who would you like to guess that was?
Oh, lowest player on defense would be probably Emmanuel Ogba, I would guess. They didn't get to, granted, he didn't get to get used that much.
This is why you make the big bucks, big dog.
Like, who it is?
That's exactly who it is. 16 total plays, 38.3 grade. Yeah. Only people in his vicinity are Deshaun Hand, the 43.5.
Who also didn't play much, many snaps.
10 snaps.
Yeah.
Eli Apple with a 46.4.
Who got body bagged half the game.
Chase Winovich on 2 snaps and Raekwon Davis on 37.
Really? They had Raekwon rated low.
Not low, a 57.5.
Okay.
It's just on our grades, you know, Brandon Peely and Duke Riley, 59, 58 on, you know, 3 snaps combined. But X and Jerome on 74 snaps, X with a 65.7 and, or Jerome with a 65.7, I'm sorry, X with a 60.2. Sealer with the 69.1, Bob. That's how you know he's a bro. He dropped a 69. Javon Holland with a 75. Bethel, only 10 snaps, 76.8. Deshaun Elliott with the 777. Jackpot, brother. Apologize for hating on the homie.
Wow. No, I liked him. But I think that's pretty much in order what I have on this list. I was going to say, like, I already go on and saying that I think that was Andrew Van Ginkle's best game, granted, you know, the style of defense that we're in now and how much more of an impact that is, I think. I think that was obviously Bradley Chubb's best game. He had to be number one rated, right, on the team?
Yep, he was one, AVG 2, Wilkins 3, Cater 4, David Long 5.
I was going to say Deshaun David Long's 6. On here. This is David Long's best game as a Dolphin. So we got Andrew Van Ginkle's arguably best game as a Dolphin. Chubb's definitely best game as a Dolphin. David Long's definitely best game as a Dolphin. Mm-hmm. Raekwon Davis, even though he's not ranked as high as these guys are on PFF, I'm going to say was probably his best game as a Dolphin based on how not good he's been playing. Almost everyone that we had some criticism for last game showed up in a huge way. Like, huge, huge way. Damn. Every single one of these guys showed up in a huge way.
Bro, literally. Ogba's literally our lowest rated week to week. Like, he just doesn't look like he's trying. It's so weird.
I just don't think that he's adapting too well to this scheme. And I think his usage, based on the coaching staff, is kind of...
messing him up.
I think it's just implicative of, maybe it's messing with his confidence, but I think it's indicative of like how they feel about him. You know, obviously he ain't cut it out for what's going on over here. I was hoping that we were going to see more of him. I didn't even think about them making Van Ginkle rush off the edge as much as they did. I didn't even cross my mind. I'm so glad that my dumb ass isn't in charge of that decision. But I thought they were going to use Ogba, and I was kind of excited for him to kind of like, you know, be like, hey, man, you know, I'm here too kind of thing. But nah, they made the right decision by going with Ginkle over him, and I don't know if he's long to be on this team. He might be gone before the trade deadline, to be honest with you.
I don't know if we could cut him right now or trade him right now. I don't know if we could do either of those things. He's going to have to, like, make some plays or do something. But it was cool to see, aside from him, thinking positive, the lowest rated last week, Ogba, Jerome, David Long, X, and then Raekwon, Chubb, Wilkins. You basically flipped them back up to the top. That was a good bounce back week for everybody. As a unit, the stats were great. it was, they showed up when we really, really needed them to clutch it out again. So that's 2 weeks in a row versus one of the better quarterbacks in the league, week one on the road. Perfect setup for him to have, like, you know, a little Cinderella story, get ESPN all horny. And then same type of deal this week, except not a top 10 quarterback, probably not even top 15, but Mac Jones is getting better. I'll give it to him. And he's not really scared. He's not as scared as he should be.
He definitely, like I said, again, like I said on this preview pod, he definitely, he looks different when you start hitting him. Let's put it like that. He's one of those guys that, you know, he doesn't go, oh, yeah, I like that. I'm going in now that I'm getting, like, beat up a little bit and moved around and off my spot. You know, good for him for slinging that ball around. He moved it like he did in the Eagles game, which is a little bit better than what we saw last year for sure. But it ain't enough, man. Xavien Howard, we talked about him after that last game. I think this was a statement game for him. Look, man, I'm learning how to play in this scheme. I'm making the right decisions now. He went back in time and basically showed why Devontae Parker's been his son in every training camp and practice they've ever had. Pushed him outside pretty much, you know, forced him off of his route. Devontae gives up almost no effort to try and beat him. Xavien Howard gets the pick, and then there was another play where Xavien Howard basically ran Kendrick Bourne's route for him all the way to the end zone, and Mac did overthrow it a little bit, and it was almost another interception for Xavien Howard.
Yeah, bro. There's still just all those, it's not even flashes. Like, it was a rough week one. And I don't know. He's still so athletic and so smart, and he just does so many great things that it's hard to imagine him slowing down. But you said it earlier, his speed has never been his saving grace. It's been that football IQ and his ability to just be in the right spot and just kind of bait people. Yeah, he's clean, man, clean.
They show tape. Like, that's who you watch. That's who young corners watch when they talk about disciplined fundamentals of playing the corner position. You watch
Absolutely.
His hips, you watch his movement, you watch the separation, the room he gives, you watch how rough he is in the first 5 yards. You know, he pushes the boundaries on how much contact he'll put on the receiver.
Sometimes
it ends in a flag, but I think it's still an adequate amount of aggression of how you're supposed to play the position.
Oh, he'll give him a little tug. He'll kind of grab him a little silence while they're going over here. You know what I mean? Kind of throw you off your timing a little bit. You know, maybe that ball floats and my guy's back there. You know,
do yourself a favor and watch A.J. Brown run routes. He'll run these dig routes on the outside. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he goes to turn around at the break of the dig route, he just puts his one hand right pretty much like on the DB's lower back as they're turning around to realize that he's cutting for that dig, and he just pushes them right on their back, and it gives them an extra like 2 yards because their momentum, they just stopped on their heels and they're not even facing you yet, and he pushes you right above your ass pretty much, and then turns
just
around to make
a little.
The catch, and
it's a little
textbook OPI, and they'll never call it. Corners should be able to do that too.
At least get a little grab, like the one that he got called for yesterday, where you kind of grab his hip a little bit.
And that's what it wasn't much.
It was grabbing. You can't even call it holding because he didn't hold him.
Yeah,
he kind of just rubbed on him a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Like,
meanwhile, the Patriots got 6 ineligible men downfield blocking. They got Hunter Henry.
Dude,
looks like he's on a run blocking assignment, throwing our guy into the end zone by force with both shoulder pads grabbed, and then turns around and he's a receiver all of a sudden. It looked like he thought he was on a run blocking play and then turned around and remembered that he was supposed to catch the ball. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, bro. It was especially when you take into account how many times did we get called for that exact penalty last year when it was completely unnecessary away from the play. It just didn't matter. They just had to like throw something at us.
Which I love that he fixed that, by the way. And you see, like, even with the pre-snap penalties too, both of those are being cut down, which is a huge problem last year.
Huge. You're seeing that all the Tua jiu-jitsu like good for him stuff. Like, no, he's actually avoiding contact. He's getting away from stuff. He's not playing hero ball. You see improvements, and to improve as a team from the team that we saw last year, that's crazy. We're trying not to get our hopes up and get too horny out here, because, you know, we see what we have, but people would expect us to be, oh, typical Dolphins fans crowning themselves Super Bowl champions at 2-0 and like getting excited about it. So no one's getting excited. We just know what we can do. Just, you know,
I mean,
we got another game this week. Let's just get after it. But
I'm not trying to crown it, but I will say, hey, Siri, who leads the NFL in passing yards?
Tua Tagovailoa leads the NFL with 715 passing yards this season.
I mean, it is what it is, man. I'm just enjoying the moment. I don't want to get off the defensive side of the ball but without finishing at saying Javon Holland, in my opinion, is the most important player on the defensive side of the ball. He is everywhere. He was everywhere in the not a loss, but what you would consider a bad game defensively for everyone. And
it
he was
like
everywhere
a loss.
In a good game when we played good on defense. He's jetting straight into a pile of men that are double the size of him to stop in the run game. He's in coverage, and when you see the ball fly out towards where he's supposed to be cutting into cover, you can see the angle that he's taking, and you're just confident. You're like, oh, he's got that. And he does. He's pushing them out of bounds before they can get the foot down. He's up to make a play and swat it. You're so confident when you see that guy running around back there. Losing him, or it would be just a massive, massive downgrade. He is so important for what they're doing right now.
He is everything you could ever ask for in a safety. He's top five in the league.
There you go. I was just about to say, where did you rank him?
Yeah, I could probably put him top three, but he's going to need to generate a couple turnovers and get his name called out on SportsCenter a few times before, you know, I'm not just a crazy Dolphins fan, but he's got it in him. He's got all the potential in the world in him, especially because he is not afraid of contact at all. When we were watching film earlier, again, you want to talk about teaching tape for me to show the DBs. Javon Holland filling the alley, coming in and just helping his boys out, ready to clean up shop or line him up on the line of scrimmage. It's read it like a book, doesn't even get touched, blows it up, solid tackle, like solid tackler, solid in coverage. I've never seen Javon Holland take a play off since we drafted him.
He's
not
a monster.
Once.
And now everyone's on the same page that the fact that Jerome Baker knows where he's supposed to be and he sets the edge appropriately. The fact that Bradley Chubb knows when to take this inside leverage versus the outside leverage on the tackle, you know, is all setting everyone up to be in the correct gaps, leaving Javon Holland to just blaze through wherever the last chance for a running back to come through and make the tackle. It is, man, what an exciting game to watch from a defensive standpoint coming off of a week that we were really, really worried about the state of it.
And I don't want to know. I don't know. You tell me if this is what you call it or if you call it something else, but for our defense to be in those positions back-to-back weeks on the road, solid coaching staff, solid teams, for them to just clamp it like that, is it safe to call that a championship defense? Or am I tripping?
I mean, what does that defense look like when Jalen Ramsey returns? When Nick Needham returns? When Brandon Jones is getting snaps?
I might sign.
I'm just saying.
I feel like
Fanfield, this was a statement. We saw a statement game from Mike McDaniel last game. And as much as I love the fact that we saw Mike McDaniel adjust and take the easier stuff and the underneath stuff and how Tua took what was given to him and they were on the same page coaching and all the stuff we talked about on the offensive side of the ball, I love it. But this was a statement game for Vic Fangio. That first game was something that you don't even see defenses commit under his coaching. They don't make that type of a game mistake. So for this drastic bounce back, missing Jalen Phillips, pressures on Bradley Chubb. Hey man, Jalen Phillips is out. We need to see why we paid you this money. Hey Raekwon, are you good or are you washed? Why did Christian Wilkins have a bad game last game? Is Jerome Baker even going to be able to play linebacker in this scheme? Was David Long Jr. a bad addition on defense? He didn't know what was going on. Every single one of those was put to bed, in my opinion, based off this last game, and I think it's only going up from here.
Fast. Put all of it to bed. And it was week one. And again, Justin Herbert is really good. And that offense is really good. The only thing that messes that. Whatever, dude. They can have it. We beat them at their house opening week and gave them the ball to beat us. So I can call him good. I'm not saying he's better than Oos, but he's tall. He's white. You know, they love him. But either way, that was... Dang, I completely lost my train of thought. You just messed me up talking about Justin Herbert. I hate that loser. He's pretty decent.
That's all I needed to hear. I'll put that one too, and then I'll put him back next to each other. Like, which is it, Chief Sut? This guy's on a podcast. Look what he said.
Yeah, no, exactly. Just take me into context or out of context. But either way, we win the game. 2-0, baby, first in the division. But I'm just so impressed. I wasn't worried. Oh, that's what I was saying. Week one, pretty decent quarterback. The only problem with that team, the Chargers, besides their head coach, questionably, is their injuries, dude. And I don't know if it's their medical staff or how they – maybe the practice habits like you were talking about. But Austin Eckler already missed a game, and they lost in the fourth quarter.
That's what happens so when you make them run 100 times in week one.
You know? So – I think it was tough for us week one. We got them at full strength, and that's not really a team you want to play at full strength. Most teams are going to play them kind of banged up and just have to handle Herbert and maybe one or two other ones. We had to handle all of it, which is a very tough task. And to be quite honest, we handled it as best as you can. So that guy's going to pass for 5,000 passing yards, whether we like him or not. We all agree that we do not wish to go back and draft him instead. I love the dude I got. He is dope. He's better than Justin Herbert. He's better than Josh Allen. And he's going to just keep showing it. If our offensive line keeps blocking like this, he takes, you know, a sack every two games.
He's not even
running the ball.
We're missing two players that you could argue are top five on this roster. Playing the way that we play now. And I'd love to wrap it on you saying Tua's better than Justin Herbert. That would be a perfect ending here. So,
you heard it here, folks.
Go ahead and follow Chief Sut on Twitter, at Chief Sut. Follow me on Twitter, at YFinsYY. Follow the podcast, at Day One Dolphins. And you'll be hearing from us previewing the Broncos game, talking about our first home game versus an AFC opponent. I got money on the game with friends. I got money on the game with gambling books.
Get them.
We'll talk about it next week. Until then, Sut?
Fins for the win. Actually, no, I'm sorry. My boy's sleeping up. Fins for the win.
Fins up.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking so football, 'cause we're the Miami Dolphins.